Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
People swear by the dude. He's the most charismatic guy you'll ever meet. And Matt Damon's like, oh, shucks, my name's Sonny Vaccaro.
SI's Ross Dellinger.
They had several open shots, and they just kept passing the ball around. Like, nobody wanted to take it and shoot it. They tried to get it in to the big man. I think a couple times he lost control of the ball. It was like, just a, man, what a disaster.
And SI's Pat Forte.
I said UCLA is like looking at some family you see every week in church that sits in the same pew in the same order and like wear the same things. Tiger Campbell's got his big hair. Jaime Jaquez has got his white headband. Mick Cronin's got his suit.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
I went with a pod. Sweet 16 in the books. A fairly ridiculous first. I wanted that fairly Dickinson. I was like playing like, what's the New York Post headline going to be? Like, Sweet 16 was just too hot. Like, it was going to be so. Every newspaper in America, every website would have just done Sweet 16, right? Fairly Dickinson animated.
Yeah.
They were my favorite story.
Fairly Ridiculous would have been the go-to there.
Yeah, or Fairly Ridiculous, which they often are called.
Yes.
So, wild weekend, bunch of upsets. I'm going to get to this. This kind of plays into my betting system update. It was a fail. It was a failure.
Did you see somebody actually tweeted at us and did it? He put $1 on each bet.
Yeah.
Did he really?
A bunch of those. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. One of our regular listeners, Backyard Randy, he put two on each one.
Okay.
So there were small stakes, right? $40. Yeah. You're in and he was Backyard Randy was all excited because Furman came in right away, and he was still at his office apparently, and he was bragging about the office of the system, not so much. So
it all went downhill.
Yeah, it went all downhill. So the system was, if you didn't listen and if you didn't bet it, good for you. Put whatever unit you want on every 10 through 14 seed. You have to bet every game because statistically it would pay out because there's so many upsets, but we don't know which upset. Like, there's just no way to predict. I just don't believe there's a way to predict, like, Furman's going to pull it off, but, you know, Virginia is just going to throw the ball straight up in the air, right? Instead of taking a timeout or getting fouled. Yeah. If you can predict that, I don't know what, I mean, you can't predict that. So that's how Virginia loses, but we don't know. So the bet was, I'll just use just for mathematical purposes, please don't ever put this much money on the system. Although it could have worked, you know, you put $100 on all of the 10 seeds, $100 on all the 11s, all the 12s, all the 13s and all 14s. So I had this whole statistical breakdown. You should have made like $1,800 if you did that. Instead, that $2,000 would have netted you a whopping $700. $770. I'm sorry.
Okay.
So you would have lost $1,230. However, my mistake, and this is why we may tweak it for next year, was not believing in the 15s and even the 16 seeds.
Yeah.
Historically, the 15s rarely win. And so their win percentage was so low dating back to 1985 that it didn't make sense to my system. But I was naive. We've now had 7 of the last 10 years, a 15 has won.
Including 3 in a row, right?
In the case of Princeton, you would have netted, $100 would have got you $770.
Yeah.
So what we actually got to do is expand it. And then had you bet all the 10s straight through the 16s, you would have bet $2,800. With FDU beating Purdue, you would have won $2,200, I think it was. And you would have won. So overall, you would have won $920 with the system. But I underestimated the 15s and 16s. And we've now had 2 16s in the last 5 years, I believe. We've had 3 straight years of the 15s knocking off a 2. So the gap is getting, I don't know what it is, smaller, flatter, whatever it may be. Just briefly, this is from the Yahoo Sports newsletter, which we do every morning. Jay Hart and Jay Busby do. It's really good. You should subscribe. They just did a little thing. Jay Busby did. The NCAA defines an upset as any victory where a team defeats another team five or more spots ahead. So like a 9-8 is not an upset, right? Or a 3-2 is not an upset. So this year they had 7 so far, and there could be more. The last 2 years were the most upsets of all time, 14 in each one. This one could still get to 11. Of the top 10, 7 and likely 8 this year will have been since 2002. So everything in 2018 is in the top 10. So more and more upsets is what we're saying. And they're just, so they're there. You just, it's hard to predict, pop it out. So as you watch this thing, Pat, thoughts on these upsets? Cause in like, I think Purdue is horrible in that game, but at the same time, FDU is pretty good. And Princeton just was the better team 2 games in a row, even though they were 15. Like these aren't miracle upsets. Like when Princeton won the last time, this was just like, yeah, we're better than you guys.
Yeah. Well, I wrote coming into the tournament that the bottom fourth of the bracket of the team seeded basically 13 through 16 was as good as we've seen in quite a while. There was just there weren't a lot of fluke conference tournament champions. There were a lot of teams that won their regular season and then won the league tournament and won like 25 games, had established themselves as really good, solid teams all year. And the top wasn't that good, right? I mean, we said all year, who's actually really good? I think we can say Alabama's demonstrably very good, and there's some others that are good. But you know, everybody kept beating everybody, so I thought the top was vulnerable, the bottom was pretty good, and so this is kind of what's happened. Now, I will say, Fairleigh Dickinson, on paper, is the worst team to ever win a game in the NCAA championship. Ever.
True.
I mean, they were horrible. They were number 298 in the Ken Pomeroy rankings out of 363. They lost to Hartford, which is dropping down to Division III, and all their players left and their coach left. They lost to Stonehill, which is moving up from Division II. They lost to Queens, which is moving up from Division II. And they didn't win their conference tournament because another team moving up from Division II, Merrimack, actually won the tournament against Fairleigh Ridiculous. And I watched the game. And I was like, oh my goodness, these teams are rough. And then to see them beat Purdue, awesome for Fairleigh Dickinson. Great story. Those guys played without fear. But my God, Purdue. My God. Yeah. I mean, that's as bad a loss as anybody's ever had. At least they didn't lose by 20 like Virginia did to UMBC. But you're playing the literal shortest team in college basketball, and you have Zach Edey, who's 7'4", and not 7'4" and stiff, but 7'4" and can play, and you somehow don't win. You can't figure out a way to manipulate that defense. It's the worst performance I think I've ever seen, period.
They seemed so scared to shoot the ball.
They were terrified. Purdue.
God, I mean, like every time you got it, they were like passing up open, like wide open shots, especially late in the game, like, they had several open shots, and they just kept passing the ball around. Like, nobody wanted to take it and shoot it. They tried to get it in to the big man. I think a couple of times he lost control of the ball. It was like, just a, man, what a disaster.
My wife was, we were watching the game. My wife does not follow college basketball. Never heard of Fairleigh Dickinson, like many people. But she's watching, and she always gets into the upsets. St. Peter's was her team last year, all the, and she just kept saying, why don't they throw it to the tall guy?
She wasn't wrong.
I'm like, that's what every single person, including, like, you watch 4 basketball games a year during March Madness, that's it. And and there's like 1,000 coaches standing around going, throw it to him and hold the ball up high, Zach. Stop bringing it down to your waist. Yeah. My God, you learn that in like 3rd grade when there's the one tall guy, right?
Yeah.
The one kid had a growth spurt early. Get it to Joey. Hold it up high, son. Purdue, Steve Lapp had a terrific line. I love Steve Lapp as a analyst. He's really good. And he had the line. He goes, because he will call some things. Lapis is like a, you know, he's kind of annoying, right? It's like he always was, but he's a great broadcast. I always liked him, but he's, you know, And then there he's like, they're scared to shoot. No one wants to shoot it. And most announcers will not say that. But you looked and they're like, Maybe Fletcher Lawyer was kind of willing to shoot, but everyone else was a lot of passing around. Hey, I'm going to stay 24 feet away from the basket, so it's not my turn to shoot. And it was that program is a mess right now.
Yeah.
In March, three straight years. And the thing was, Matt Painter used to always win in March.
Mm-hmm.
It's just lately they can't. You know, and look, they lost last year's Sweet 16, but they lost to St. Peter's. Who's St. Peter's and FDU 2 years in a row. And you're making $4 or $5 million a year. Yeah. Yikes.
And the third year was to North Texas in Indianapolis. You know, there weren't big crowds for that Sweet 16 or for that NCAA tournament, but Purdue had a crowd, you know, even though it was that COVID year. And I was at that game courtside. I watched both the other two, obviously. And to see a team that had so many obvious advantages completely fail to take advantage of them is to see a team, quite frankly, hate to use the word, choke. But they were actively choking. And there's a mental block right now with them in these tournament games that is undeniable, where they've just got to step back and say, why are we completely folding up in these games with good teams?
And, I mean, I'm sure we'll talk about this at some point, but just – thinking, you know, Purdue, Big Ten, gosh, the Big Ten had kind of a just as bad of a first round as they did in the first round in football. It was rough. One team, I think, left the Izzo in Sparty.
I mean, the Big Ten. Everybody who watched the Big Ten this year knew no one was any good.
Right,
it was like Purdue was it. Yeah, like this Michigan State team was infuriating at times.
Mm-hmm.
And so wasn't Illinois, and so wasn't everybody. Yeah. And Purdue dominated the league, but then here we were, and that just so I don't think anyone entered in the Big Ten expecting a lot, but boy, they didn't get a whole lot. There is Izzo. We'll do him. 15 of 25 Sweet 16s. You know, that's a pretty unbelievable stat. This was a classic one. It's not that good of a team,
right?
But man, they made all the plays. And got them there. Gonzaga's now made 8 consecutive Sweet 16s. That's incredibly impressive. And again, everyone focuses on they didn't win a title. Neither of these two programs have won a title in a long time, at Gonzaga ever, and MSU since 2000. But this has not been a tournament for Blue Bloods. So Sparty won it in 2000. I mean, that's a long time ago. The only other team still alive that won a national championship this century is UConn, which obviously won 4 of them and have now resuscitated their program under Dan Hurley and getting back to the Big East. And boy, they're good. They could win a 5th. Yeah. They're one of the few that I think could beat Alabama. But Duke's gone. Kansas is gone. Obviously, they had just a huge shakeup with Bill Self getting sick, and we hope he's doing as well as possible. I think you were pointed out, like, I'm almost glad he didn't coach. I don't know. It's just... That was tough. I don't know what to make of Kansas, but Duke's gone. Kentucky, their Final Four drought is now 8 years, 7 tourneys. And that was, they just got beat. It was a good game against K-State, but team's a mess. So it's not easy just being that little conference or that champions tournament they have at the beginning of the year. They need to rename that sucker, invite some new teams.
No kidding. Right? Yeah, 3 of the 4 of them are gone. One of them didn't even make the. Oh wait, no. I'm confusing North Carolina there.
Yeah, they made it. They didn't make the tournament. So, they're not in it though. Right.
No,
Duke, Kansas State, and Kentucky. Right. So,
Duke, Kansas, Michigan State, and Kentucky. Yeah,
Kentucky, not good. Not good.
No, it's.
I watching that game. What I was struck by is other than Oscar Tshiebwe, I thought K-State might have had the next 3 best players. Transfers that Kentucky got, they're older. That was the theory. They're not that good.
No.
Like Keontae Johnson, Marquise Noel, those guys were much better than what Kentucky was trotting out there. This was a really strong team K-State had, and they just were a better team.
Yeah, yeah. Kentucky, like, Cason Wallace played really well, and he'll go be a top 10 pick probably as a freshman. You know, that's more the classic Cal player. But Oscar Tshiebwe is now going to leave, and they're going to bring in next year's team will look more like the Cal teams of the from 2010 to 2015, 16, 17, whatever, where it's going to be 5 wildly talented freshmen out there, and we'll see who else kind of fills in the cracks. But look, people in Kentucky are tired of it. They're tired of the Cal experience because the returns, as you indicated, are diminishing. They haven't been there. They're 2-5 in their last three postseasons. That counts SEC tournament and NCAA tournament. They haven't been to a Sweet 16. They haven't played in an SEC tournament championship game since, what was it, 2018 or something, 2019? And they haven't played in the Sweet 16 since 2019. So there's not a lot of there. There's a lot of money being spent. There's a lot of bluster. There's a lot of recruiting talk and buzz, but there's not enough on-court success for people to say, yeah, we think Cal's still the guy, that he can bring us banner number 9. They've been talking about banner number 9 since 2012. Hadn't happened.
Hmm. What happens? Is it a situation where, I know you've written about it before, but it's like a Jimbo Fisher, right, kind of contract that they're kind of stuck in.
Yep, that's right. And, they'll get one more year because they're bringing in this ridiculous recruiting class. But, I mean, people would be perfectly happy if John Calipari found some other place to work at any point in time between now and the start of next season.
So they got 4 of the rivals' top 10
players loaded.
Coming. Maybe even more. That's pretty good. 4 of the top 7, including DJ Wagner,
mm-hmm.
Justin Edwards, Aaron Bradshaw, Robert Dillian. 4 of the top 7. That is a better recruiting class than the Fab Five or anything like that. Duke that one year with Zion had 1, 2, and 3 and only made the Elite Eight. But, man, that was a good team.
Yeah.
And that was an exciting team. And they got beat by Izzo, one of those Izzo kind of things.
Yes, they did.
So, I mean, obviously, they owe Cal too much money. And, I mean, that's a very exciting, promising season. But, man, their offense breaks down.
Defense is bad. That's defense this team was bad defensively.
This was a bad, it just wasn't, it was a very hard watch. And back when he had it really rolling, maybe they don't win it, but it's a fun team to watch. It's like Kansas lost yesterday, but all year Kansas was fun to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like it looked like a really good basketball team and they get upset and these things happen. But this was just like, this is a lot of sandpaper.
Yeah.
It's just a lot of sandpaper. And you're like, God, what is happening in this? I was moved by the fact that I thought K-State just simply had, maybe they didn't have top 1-12 better talent, but really good. They had really good players. So let's look at all these upsets the last 2 years and then this year. So maybe we're not going to statistically hit just quite as high, but again, the 15s. And we don't have an answer, but why? Why all of a sudden? This is not a new tournament.
Right, no.
The field has been essentially the same since 85. Obviously, we added 4 more, but that hasn't really played a big role in this. Why is it the COVID extra year? Is it the transfer portal where guys, we don't think of these transfers, but like Fairleigh Dickinson had a whole slew of guys come in, right? They just restocked the team. Is it NIL that's allowing some guys to find some different spaces where there's some money? And it's what I always call, we've talked about this, like an active dollar, not a passive dollar. Kentucky spends a passive dollar. They build the nicest facility in the world, and it takes a long time to build it, and then you have to get recruits on to see it and that type of stuff. And then there's an active dollar of like, come here and we'll get you $20,000.
Right.
It's just going straight to players. And maybe that not necessarily wins you the number one recruit or the number one transfer, but it wins you some guys that will fill in. And you go, hey, what the hell? I don't know. I mean, freaking Pitino was talking about NIL and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Has all of these things? What is it?
I think it's all of that. I do think the extra COVID year and the transfer portal have combined to make a major impact. I mean, some of these teams are so old. Like, Texas is incredibly old. You talk about, specific guy, like Kansas State's guy, Desai Sills, 156 games played in college, I believe. San Diego State, Matt Bradley, 152. There's just guys been around forever.
DeAndre Williams.
Is 26.
Is 26 years old, yeah.
Yeah. Juroš Plavšić, the enforcer for Tennessee, who put Kyle Filipowski's 19-year-old ass on the deck twice in the first minute and a half, and could have maybe gotten himself thrown out of the game for it, but didn't. But set the tone of men versus boys. Jaroslav Plavšić is 24 years old. Yeah. Filipowski's 19. It's like, oh, okay. We got some men out here playing. And so I think that's had a lot to do with it. Just guys that have played a lot more basketball, more physically mature, more mentally mature, and they are spread out a little bit more. The portal had, look, you go where you can play, right? The portal has not sent everybody to one school or the other school. It's spread people out as much as anything else. So that's had to do with it. The, you know, the NIL stuff, I think, is there's too early to get returns on whether that's, you know, really played a part here. But it's clear it's helped keep some guys in school. Drew Timmy's still in school at age 100. Tiger Campbell and Jaime Jaquez at UCLA, who we've been – I said UCLA is like looking at some family you see every week in church that sits in the same pew in the same order and, like, wear the same things. That they, Tiger Campbell's got his big hair. Jaime Jaquez has got his white headband. Mick Cronin's got his suit. They look the same. They play the same. They've been doing the same thing for 3 years together. It shows.
Yeah. I'm stunned to hear this, Pat. What podcast out there would have ever predicted that the transfer portal and NIL would not destroy the competitive balance?
I don't know.
I hadn't heard that. Hadn't heard that argument anywhere. I thought it was wild, wild west. We're all doomed. Ross, thoughts on why the hell is this?
We talk about football too. It's the same thing. I think the portal has dispersed talent more and spread it out across the country. Those players who would be, you know, sitting the bench, so to speak, are now playing and having bigger roles a lot of times for these smaller schools. And I think we're seeing it play out in both sports, where the portal really is positively impacting parity in the sports.
I will say real quick, one area where we do know NIL has made an impact, Miami, Nigel Pack, who got the alleged $800 grand deal. He scored 21 in the first round, had 12 in the second round. So NIL
return on investment.
Miami, yes.
ROI for Mr. John
the
Ruiz.
Life wallet. Yeah, the life wallet came in pretty sweet on that. Let me get this. I'll get to this one. Coach Musselman. Keep your shirt on, bro. Like, whoa. Takes the shirt off after getting to his third consecutive Sweet 16. Great accomplishment, Coach Muss. Much respect. I'm nervous about what happens if they win again.
Yeah. Trousers off.
What other clothing comes off? Yeah.
Is this strip poker? Man's in great shape. Well groomed. Manscaping himself. Okay. This is stuff I didn't want to know. I didn't want to know exactly how Coach Muss carries himself underneath his shirt. But now I do, and I can't unsee it. But please, Eric, no. Just that's it.
We don't need that from him. We do not. if he feels so moved, look, it's a free country, and all the Arkansas fans love it because you won. But this is also
this
the
is
same
not a
guy
trend
who,
we need.
Yeah, left the floor in Nashville at the SEC tournament, F-bombing everybody and having one of his assistants knock a phone out of somebody's hand who was taking video of him as they walked off. So a little bit of a difference between handling victory and handling defeat there. But
yeah, I'm sure he was fine with videos of him, of shirtless him on a table.
Yeah, right.
Over the weekend.
It was inadvertent, Arkansas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Inadvertent. Yeah.
He's got a good team, though. Nick Smith Jr., Anthony Black. He's got a bunch of pros, and they play defense. He's doing the Calipari act better than Calipari right now. He's got lottery picks to play D. This is when Kentucky won, when they just had Anthony Davis and just be like, I'll just block shots. I'm good. You know? Well, yeah.
No, they are extremely talented, and they're going to have multiple guys picked high in the first round. But they have been a wild, hot mess this year. I mean, they were the number 10 seed in the SEC tournament because they lost so many games. Yeah. I mean, they couldn't put it together. They'd put it together for a streak of a couple of games, and then they'd fall apart, and you watch them in game, and that's like, you know, they go half an hour without making a shot. They looked like they didn't have enough basketballs to go around. You had like four alpha males all trying to alpha male out alpha male eat each other. But you saw also, like, when they put it together, you're like, oh boy, these guys could really be good. And now through two games, they've put it together. So Arkansas-UConn is going to be big time. And Gonzaga-UCLA, that's the best Sweet 16 games in the West right there.
Yeah. All right, who can beat Alabama? Alabama's the best team to me, still the best team. I still think they're going to win it, but what's left and who can beat them?
Yeah, they're coming to Louisville here, so I'll get them, and I don't think anybody else in Louisville can beat them. I may not even come close. So San Diego State, maybe they can muck it up with them, but Creighton has a good team, but I just don't see either of them beating Alabama. You look, Tennessee has beaten Alabama once, but I don't think that's a repeatable thing. I don't think Kansas State can do it. Get Izzo against Nate Oates in the Final Four game? Maybe, but I don't like that. Texas or Houston? Possible. And then I think any of the four, but probably especially, I think UConn could. And
UConn
I think
can beat them. They beat them either before.
Gonzaga. UCLA might be too hurt, but I think it's absolutely Alabama's tournament to win, but there's a few teams that could beat them.
What about Houston?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I had them. They showed what they're made of in the second half against Auburn.
Yeah.
You know, in what was a true road atmosphere, which I thought was a joke. But, like, they didn't just turn it around on Auburn. They killed Auburn in the second half. 50-23. You know, down 10, arena rocking against them. And they just came out and said, well, you're not scoring anymore. And they even their two best players got in foul trouble, and they had Tremont Mark step up and score 26 points, just ISO play after ISO play. So Houston's got all the moxie. I'm still not sure they have the athletic skill, especially inside, but they'd be a tough team to get out.
Yeah, I'm with you. San Diego State plays really nice defense, but it's going to be Alabama has to beat itself. Houston's got the athletes. UConn can definitely do it. They beat them in the regular season soundly. And I just love this UConn team.
Yep.
And I think, Adama Sagano, is that it? Yep. Sonogo. A lot of players this week. Good Lord.
Yeah.
What's his lines? He had 28, 13, and a block against Iona, 13 to 17. Obviously, Iona. Then 24, 8, and another block against St. Mary's.
Yeah.
He's bringing it. Like, that's the one you put on and say, all right, who do you got to guard? Finally, someone, because you're like, who the hell can guard Alabama?
Right.
That's about one of the few guys you're like, who you got? Mm-hmm. Alabama.
Yep. But that's,
and as I said, man, Quinterly is the key to that team. He is so freaking good. He's not, he's not Brandon Miller NBA prospect, but I love watching that kid play.
He's up and down. He's been up so far this tournament. So if he's got to play two more sound games.
If he goes
games,
down, they could be in trouble because Miller hasn't been great.
No. He had some stretches in the second round. First round, did nothing. He had the one stretch. Like, if anybody was wondering why Alabama's done the ethical back bends that it's done to keep him in the lineup, it was the stretch where he came soaring down, pinned this guy's shot, blocks it, and then runs to the other end, catch and shoot three. And it's like, oh, okay. Yeah, that's why.
I love the feel good story of Alabama. What are you gonna do?
Yeah.
The country recoils.
Yep. Here they come.
Ain't no stopping them, man. At least they sold it all out. They torched, they burnt the kingdom down. At least it was for a heck of a good team.
Yeah.
You may never recover, or it's going to take a long time. But at least you might win this thing on that. All right, one of the storylines coming in was whether Rodney Terry, the interim Texas basketball coach, could prove his way to the full-time job. He's 2-0. I beat a really good Penn State team in that second round. Now they get Xavier and Sean Miller, who's also playing really well. They were very impressive. can it happen, Pat? Can Rodney Terry still get this job? Obviously, what's possibly waiting is a massive in the state of Texas game between Texas and Houston for a chance to go to the Final Four in Houston if everybody advances per seeding.
Yeah.
What's Terry's chances here? Or has he got a... They haven't given him a contract yet.
They haven't given him anything yet. And we talked about when the bracket first came out, the possibility of a Texas versus Texas A&M game and both the risk and reward for that for Rodney Terry. Like, you win that game, that'll help you. You lose that game, that'll hurt you. Well, they didn't even get to play it. They played Penn State instead, won a nail biter there, had Penn State down, and then Penn State came back, but they won it. I would give it to him if I were the AD. You know, Texas being Texas, they the idea of just elevating an interim coach doesn't quite suit the size of the ego there, I don't think. But he has done an incredible job. I mean, he had a good team to work with, but that thing could have gone sideways in a heartbeat. Instead, they go, 23-8 through the regular season, 12-6 in a really good league, and then they win the conference championship. They beat Kansas by 20 twice within the span of the last 8 days of the regular season. Now they've won two straight to get to the Sweet 16. I expect them to beat Xavier and probably to play Houston to get to that Final Four. I would hate to think that you could be 29-8 and lose to a number one seed Houston and somebody says, nah, that's not good enough. We're going to go a different direction. But knowing Texas, it could happen. I just don't know what that direction would be unless it's like Eric Musselman. Nate Oates was in demand there for a while. I think one of the reasons they gave Nate Oates that extension after one of his players was involved in a murder, or several of his players,
yeah,
was because they thought Texas wanted to come get him. I don't think Texas wants to come get Nate Oates anymore. So the pool of people that you could replace Rodney Terry with theoretically is shrinking, but I don't think it's non-existent yet. But he's done great work, and I would give him the job if it were me.
And then Tommy Lloyd, he maybe was thought to be a candidate and out in the first round. So, yeah, it makes a lot of sense for the candidate pool to be shrinking. And as it's shrinking, the interim is making a run. It is. It's hard to see them not going with him.
They love big names. I was watching TCU last night and was wondering, man, Jamie Dixon, that guy's just kind of quietly wins wherever he goes. And, maybe he's a candidate. I don't know.
If he pulled a Del Conte and left TCU for Texas, boy, he would not be popular. And TCU is his alma mater.
I know. I don't think so. But I was just watching going, oh, you know what? No one ever talks about Jamie Dixon.
Yeah.
Like, does not get a lot of attention, never has, and he's done a really good job at Pitt and TCU. And they lost last night to Gonzaga, but it was an excellent game. And Gonzaga's is really good. We finally answered the question whether Drew Timmy is good. I've always wondered.
He's good. It's 27. I believe he's tied the record for the most 20-point games in NCAA tournament history.
So. Man, they needed a basket late, and they just threw it down there, and he put a little chicken wing hook on a guy and boom, put it up. It was like,
yeah, you got a million old man moves down there.
Oh yeah. It's like New York City Catholic League,
Oh, I saw that at Archbishop Malloy.
The first
Lefty McDonough, who's unstoppable down the blocks.
The three that he made against TCU was the first one he's made in 2023. Hadn't made one since New Year's Eve, by the way. So that was well timed. Yeah.
There we go. Princeton.
Yeah.
Cool story. Mitch Henderson, their coach, was the point guard on the team that beat UCLA. That was a massive upset almost 30 years ago. I actually covered that. I don't know when it was.
Oh, yeah. 1996.
Yeah, it might have been like the first one I ever covered. NCAA. I was like, this is great. NCAA tournament's awesome. And, that was how shocking those upsets were. They were bigger back then. And that's why there's more of them now. They kind of blend away. But, like, you remember that one or the Valpo, the Valpo one was not even like, I don't know what they were seeded, but they weren't even like a 15.
Yeah, they were like a 13.
Some of these great upsets.
Mm-hmm.
What they did to Missouri.
Oh, my God.
I mean, that was just a destruction.
Yeah.
It was one thing to outlast Arizona and win down the stretch, but then they do it again. I don't know how they'll do against Creighton, but because Creighton's pretty good, really good. All these teams are at this point.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
I mean, look, if you're sitting there saying who played best in the second round, like Princeton's like third.
Yeah.
who's coming in with the best wins? You're like, well, Princeton absolutely annihilated their team. I don't know. It's a wild one, and I don't think they will cut you. It's a lot of the same old stuff. They shoot. They're old. They're confident, and they just there they are. They're going. People were pulling up like their player profiles and like link. I saw somebody had this thing where they're pulling up the guy's LinkedIn, like the guys on the team, and they're like, he interned last summer as a financial analyst at Morgan Stanley or something.
It doesn't say. Yeah, camp counselor at ABC camp.
It was all this stuff. You're like, oh, that guy was the guy? And he's in like a suit. He's like in his little LinkedIn picture, stuff like that. You're like, oh, Princeton. Here we go. Yeah, those guys got it going. Thoughts on Princeton, Pat?
They're the one team that makes, you want to talk about counter-programming the trends of modern college sports? Transfer portal doesn't exist for them. They don't give scholarships. COVID extra year? Hell no. If you remember, the Ivy League did not play basketball in 2020-21, and they still kept those guys on campus, a lot of them. A lot of these guys played. The Ivy League was the first league to shut it down in February of 2020, well before everybody else. Then they did not even play the whole next year, and they still kept a basketball team together. They give no scholarships. NIL, please. Transfer portal, please. None of that. And here they are. I mean, it's amazing. It is the non-modern program to be in a 2023 Sweet 16. This is not one that I saw coming at all. But they are a good team. I mean, I watched them in the Ivy League final against Yale. Yale's good. They beat Yale's ass. Then when they shut down Arizona late and pull away from that game, and then, Missouri, holy moly. And it's funny, Missouri, it's just a complete hodgepodge of transfers from mid-majors. And they looked like a mid-major team against Princeton. Princeton just, as you said, carved them to pieces.
Yeah, every time I looked up, some Princeton guy was grabbing a rebound over Missouri. And so I looked at the stats, and they 44 rebounds, Princeton to 30 for Missouri. They just God, it's just crazy to see that. And you're right. It's almost like these two names should have been flipped. And then Missouri, I thought this was going to be it, Pat. I thought they were gonna crack this skid of since I think it's like 13, 14 years since they've gotten to the Sweet 16. But nope, can't do it.
Yeah. Hey, they at least won a game for the first time since 2010.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you get an opportunity like a 15 seed to finally get to the Sweet 16, and you don't just lose, you get punked, you get routed. That wasn't very good.
I was actually watching that game with a Missouri fan, and it was just, he's like early on, and now that you guys are defeatist, right? You're expecting defeat.
Hey, we know the school history, okay?
Yeah, no, he does too.
We're defeatist for a reason.
And we're like, well, it's early. He's like, I don't know. He's like, we don't seem to know that they're going to run that play that they keep running.
It was early. It got late early.
It got late. Ross, how the hell did you know Tennessee was going to be good? We were trashing the heck, and you were right.
That's right.
I know. Hey, Tennessee and San Diego State, I just kind of pulled them out. Lo and behold, here we are. Yeah, I had some people text me over the weekend who listened to the pod and was like, "Were you just BSing around about this, or what? What happened here?" I'm like, I haven't watched a ton of college basketball, but here we are. So it goes to show, right? It's just like predicting this tournament, right? Is crazy, and you never know what's gonna happen.
I will say, too, I tweeted Sunday night when the bracket came out, Tennessee is a vulnerable four seed. And none other than Sean Sullivan, Sully, our former producer, tweeted back, said, that's an understatement. Even Sully, who is the ultimate orange goggles guy, had given up on this team.
Sully Vol is like his online persona. Yeah, stands around watching like inter-squad baseball scrimmages between even he had no faith. And this guy, this is a guy who he is the one thing about Sully, he's the most devoted fan ever, the most optimistic fan ever.
Yeah.
He has predicted that the United States men's soccer team will win the World Cup next time. But never, talk about never winning a playoff game. They're going to win it all. He is pie and he is blue sky. And yeah, he didn't believe.
No.
They played really well against Duke, and Duke just 52 yeah. points with that much talent. You know, like I said, I would not say it's a disaster with John Shire at all. Won the league, beat Carolina. You can't expect a young coach to step in seamlessly and automatically be as good as the retiring guy. It can happen. It occasionally happens, but I think you look and say, all right, he's growing into the job. This guy's going to be a good coach. We're going to be good. I think you can still believe that by Duke, but 52 points against Tennessee was not, you know, that they're not putting that one on the resume.
No, no. They got physically knocked backward early and never fully recovered. You know, they were young. They looked young. Their coach looked young. And they got beat by a more mature team. So they'll reload. They'll have a great recruiting class coming in again next year. They'll be a little bit like Kentucky, where it's just going to be super young and talented. And we'll just see whether that's good enough in an old sport.
Also, and you look at what lies ahead, you know, talked about Tennessee a little bit. So they get Florida Atlantic and then Kansas State or Michigan State. Right. So it's not like
they're winnable.
Like one, two, or three seeds standing in their way. And would be Rick Barnes' first Final Four in a long, long time, right?
20 years.
That's hard to believe. 2003. Yeah, 2003. Yep. Yeah.
TJ Ford, right?
Yep. That's right.
That was TJ. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Barnes is such a, he struggles usually in the tournament. I mean, he had Kevin Durant and only won one game.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He's had a lot of NBA players and not gone very far. And Kevin I don't think he has any NBA players on his current team. And
Oh, I forgot this one from earlier. FDU Purdue, if we want to make fun of Purdue more, because who doesn't? Big Drum didn't save you now, did it, Purdue?
I knew you were about to say something about the Drum. Yes.
Lafayette. it's just a little river. It's not really a west. It's just Lafayette. So when FDU coach Tobin Anderson said, like, they made a big play out of this thing, that he's in his locker room before the game, like the day before, and he goes, the more I watch Purdue, the more I think we can beat them. And, like, Purdue got kind of offended by that, right?
Apparently not offended enough.
Like, why was this a big deal?
Right. I mean, what
the hell do you want the coach to say?
What? I mean, are you serious? I thought that was pretty...
Yeah, yeah, I mean, well, he was right. He wasn't even...
Yeah.
It was like, like this big thing. Oh, I was excited. Like, he's the 16 seed that lost to Hartford and Stonehill. What do you want him to say? I've been watching tape, guys. We're screwed. Just try to enjoy, take as much swag as we can get out of here. We're good. Bus home 10 minutes after the game.
Try not to get hurt out there. Yeah.
Yeah. What? How is this a controversy? Is that?
I don't know. I thought that was ridiculous.
Is Purdue that soft that they were offended by a 16? Tobin Anderson? The guy was a D2 coach last year.
Yeah. Yeah.
Saint I love that
Thomas
guy.
Thomas Aquinas. Bad haircut. Brought like three of his players with him.
Yeah. He lost to a D2.
Yeah. No, that's like in Purdue, if you're offended, do something about it. Like,
yeah, I know, right?
The more I watch Purdue, the more I think we can beat them. This was the trash talk of the NCAA. I mean, how soft are we? This is why I like the UFC. They literally are like, I'm going to kill the man. He will die in the octagon. And nobody blinks. No one's
college
offended.
Basketball. Oh, my gosh. He said they're going to beat
him. Oh, my God, this man. This man said, I think we can beat them. Toughen up, Purdue. Toughen up.
Yeah.
Toughen up.
Come back with a bigger drum, man.
You're going to need a bigger drum. Oh, man.
I did appreciate, by the way, I made reference in my column just savaging Purdue to a flaming garbage barge floating down the Wabash River. Ah. And I want to thank our podcast listeners for correcting me from it's not the Tippecanoe River, it's the Wabash River, so that I could correctly impugn your program. So I appreciate that.
Is it even a river? Isn't it a creek? Isn't it a creek?
Yeah, I don't even know you could have a garbage barge on it, but.
Yeah, I don't know. A flaming garbage barge. I mean, it is a river, I guess, but it's not that small, but whatever. Do you guys see the ads for the Sonny Vaccaro, Michael Jordan movie?
Air. Yes.
They're just calling it Air. Yes. Everyone see these commercials? They're everywhere.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So they're making a movie about when Sonny Vaccaro, the shoe, I don't know what you call him, Kingmaker, one of the most fascinating people in all of basketball, and somebody should put him in the damn Basketball Hall of Fame. Because I don't know how he's not, if you're literally talking about the history of basketball and you know, have Sonny Vaccaro as a contributor. They have the guy who invented the 24-second shot clock and like every, you know, every sort of good college coach makes it. This guy just changed the culture, everything about basketball in multiple ways, including NIL, including running the O'Bannon lawsuit and everything he's ever done. One of the most fascinating people I've ever met, known him for a long time, spoke to him almost every day. Incredibly colorful guy. Back in 1984, Nike struggling. He walks into Phil Knight's office and says, I want to sign Michael Jordan. We want to make one shoe. I don't want to try to outbid Converse for all these established guys. I'm going to take this rookie out of North Carolina. We're going to make a shoe just for him. And that's how we're going to build our basketball business. None of it made any sense at the time, except to Sonny, because that's what he is. And Phil Knight famously said, how sure are you? He says, I'll bet my job on it. And as Sonny always laughed later, it was a crap job anyway at the time. Nike wasn't a good place to work, but got good. He also, you know, he signed Kobe Bryant to Adidas, was a huge player in LeBron, signed St. Vincent St. Mary High School for $25,000 a year and had LeBron James for years for nothing.
Yeah.
All different stuff. So they got this movie, if you've seen, Matt Damon as Sonny Vaccaro and Ben Affleck, his buddy there, as Phil Knight. What are your thoughts on the movie trailer? I won't spoil my thoughts quite yet, Pat.
I honest to God, I have just seen it like with the sound off, so I don't even know what they say. I think it's a great idea for a movie. We'll see how it translates. And I do have a very, very hard time knowing Sonny Vaccaro, so I'm seeing Matt Damon playing Sonny Vaccaro. That just doesn't seem right to me.
Yeah, I agree.
You need to have somebody that just kind of projects a little more hustler, you know, than Matt Damon in that role. So maybe he can pull it out. He's a good actor, so maybe he can pretend he's a hustler. But I'll watch it for sure. I'll watch it with great curiosity because that is truly one of the seminal like business deals in the history of sports in terms of shoe impact and changing the trajectory of companies and turning basketball players, especially into mini apparel corporations.
Yeah. One of the most significant things. All right. Why don't we play a little bit of this? Sean, do you have the trailer, let's just play a little bit of it and I'll make my comments or we can all listen. Go ahead.
1984 has been a tough year. Our sales are down, our growth is down.
Sonny, I brought you in here to grow the basketball business.
People don't know what the hell a Nike is.
What's a Converse?
NBA All-Star shoe.
There's nothing cool about Nike.
You would have to have a pretty compelling pitch.
I can tell them the one thing the other companies can't compete with. Our basketball division is terrible.
I do not love it.
This is where you come up with a brilliant idea that no one else can see. Let's hear it.
I got it.
I found him.
Who's that? Jesus?
Can't afford it.
I'm willing to bet my career on one guy.
My name's Sonny Vaccaro. I'm with Nike.
Do you typically make it a habit of showing up at people's front doors unannounced?
I don't like to take no for an answer.
Oh, man.
All right, let's stop it here. Not sure that's the best, but this would be my point. I am very excited for this movie, and I'm very excited Sonny Vaccaro is getting a movie. Like I said, he should be in the Hall of Fame. He should get more attention for what he did. Why in the world did they make Sonny Vaccaro into like a Midwestern insurance salesman?
Yeah. I mean, that's so not who he is.
What? Matt Damon is like Hollywood legend. I don't know. Probably won Academy Awards, like Goodwill. I mean, it's Matt Damon. Okay. So the man can act. I'm not saying he, you know, it's not. What? You took, like, Sonny Vaccaro, first of all, you have to have an Italian guy play him.
Yeah.
Okay. He is an Italian from Western PA who is a straight street hustler.
Yeah.
And everyone thought he was in the mob, not because he was in the mob, but because he sounds like he's in the mob.
Right.
The way he talks. Pat. Let me tell you, we got this going on. Well, Sonny, Danny, here we go. We're going to do this. I got this guy, LeBron James. Holy, right? The way he talks about everything. He talks fast. He walks up to people and kisses them on the cheek. He wears track suits. He's one of the most fascinating individuals you will ever meet. He's a total tour de force of nature. How does, like, even when he's like this, how does this guy who, again, is like a Western Pennsylvania, Italian street hustler, befriend Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, and LeBron James to where they swear, like, people swear by the dude. He's the most charismatic guy you'll ever meet. And Matt Damon's like, oh, shucks, my name's Sonny Vaccaro.
I would like to hope you will entrust me with your business.
I have an idea. Like, what is this character?
I've never met Sonny. I've interviewed him one time, but the way you guys are talking about him, it sounds like they should have picked somebody from The Sopranos to play him.
Oh, yeah. He gotta have an Italian. I don't want to say Matt Damon's not up for the role, but if he is, he didn't put any effort. I mean, I hope the movie is very successful. I'm very excited about it. But what is this? I was like, wait, what?
Yeah,
Matt Damon.
That is odd casting. Very odd casting. Yeah, there should be a 100 other people you could get to do that role.
And they make Phil Knight out to be this oblivious idiot who's like, I don't know about air. Like, oh yeah, that guy's a dumbass. Phil Knight, he just...
Yeah. Phil Knight was, I think he was pretty, no dumbass.
Pretty smart himself.
Yeah.
I don't understand the movie.
By the way, we talk about NIL quite a bit, obviously, on this show. And it's the one time I did interview Sonny when the NCAA's, you know, when NIL became official July 1, 2021, I called him up and just wanted to get some comments. You know, obviously he had fought with the Ed O'Bannon lawsuit and all that and, you know, considers himself to exposing the NCAA with the Ed O'Bannon stuff. And I went and pulled up his old quotes to me, which really are great. I'll read a few of them. He said, the NCAA hung on to something that was totally illegal and immoral. And the thing that hurt the most was to watch Ed O'Bannon be demeaned. But in the end, we did it. It's monumental. And here's the best quote. It's the best thing I've ever done in my life. And I signed Michael Jordan. Woo, that's great. Yeah.
And you had to rewind that tape four times to get those words because he talked so fast.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I can't believe this is one of the most unique people you'll ever meet. Whether you love Sonny Vaccaro or hate Sonny Vaccaro, you're like, what is that? That's this guy. He's a complete force of nature. And I don't know why. It was like Matt Damon just decided to play it some other role. I don't know. So I find that funny. People are going to be like, oh, that Sonny Vaccaro is a polite, easygoing guy.
Midwestern boy.
Oh, shucks. Yeah. Like
raising the cornfields. Yeah.
Yeah. He is he's the one who calls Ed O'Bannon Eddie.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Still, Ed O'Bannon's like 50 years old. I don't know. So that's the, we'll see how that movie gets going, though. I will definitely go see it. All right, real quick, we just got a couple little stories here I wanted to get to. Speaking of NIL, big signing this week. Texas A&M wide receiver Jalen Preston signed a NIL deal with Gage Gandhi Bail Bonds.
Okay.
He's got a bail bondsman. excited to announce my partnership with Gage Gandy Bail Bonds, ready to help the Aggies get their feet back on the street.
Oh, boy. No, that isn't really the line, is it?
That's what it says in his post.
Wow.
Oh, my goodness.
Instagram post. He's got wearing a suit. He's right in front. He's like pointing at you with a phone. It's go look up Jalen Preston 5 on Instagram. You'll laugh. It's a great ad. It's the best I've seen since the coldest up in Nebraska.
The coldest.
Yeah, he's the 24-hour bail bondsman. Yeah, good stuff. So I suppose that was inevitable that you would need a bail bondsman would come through. But I much respect for that.
He could be valuable in the locker room for if some guys get in a scrape. You're like, hey, Jalen, what's your guy's name again?
Yeah, what's our man's name? Yeah, that was a strong one. Also, just briefly here, down in the panhandle of Florida, a quahog clam, it's a big clam, was found by a guy named Blaine Parker. He dug it up, and this thing was massive, and they took it to the, he said, quote, we were just going to eat it. But we thought about it for a while and figured it was probably pretty special, so we didn't want to kill it. Okay, this is the quahog. So they brought it to the Marine Specimen Lab, and the quahog has been deemed to be 214 years old.
Jeez.
214-year-old quahog.
The quahog is older than the War of 1812? Is that what we're saying?
Yeah. They're calling it Aberclam Lincoln. That's what it's been named. Aberclam Lincoln.
That's terrible. That is
quahog humor. There's a quahog community out there I did not know about. And then I started.
It's. Do you see the pictures of it? It's not like I was expecting it to be like the size of a freaking, queen bed or something. But it's about what? The size of like a softball.
6 inches wide and 2.6 pounds.
Yeah.
Really?
And we're but they normally don't weigh more than half a pound. 214 years this sucker's old, been popping around.
Looks good at Gage.
1809, they're saying. So in 1809, this is what happened when Aberclam Lincoln was born.
You can't continue with that. Doodle.
This whole thing was terrible. Just so that's I could say worst. Aberclam Lincoln. What are we doing?
We're talking
yeah, we're talking old quahogs. I don't care. Whatever.
Abraham Lincoln was born in 1809. So, okay. All right. I get it.
There you go. Oh, now it's good. Claim. Now Pat's like, oh, yeah, this is a great joke. Sense. Yeah, let's keep going.
You don't think
behind it.
You don't think the quahog community knew that, Pat? They're a little more learned than us.
I'm sure they did. I'm sure
Pat's
they
like,
did.
Oh, that was when, Princeton beat Rutgers in a basketball. It's like you go back in those the media guides. You ever look back and it's like Ohio State played football against like the Columbus YMCA?
Oh,
And they all claim these victories, right?
106-4.
Yeah. Poor dudes working out at the Y, their ass kicked. Anyway, 1809, the Indiana Territory was divided into what would become the states of Illinois and Indiana. This sucker's older than Indiana. I mean, that's old. Robert Fulton patented the steamboat.
There you go.
Pope Pius VII excommunicated Napoleon in 1809. Thrown out of the church for invasion of the papal states.
Wow.
Yeah, that would do it. That would do it.
This clam's seen some things. Well, if it had eyes, it would have seen some things.
Yeah.
Now, this is not even close to the oldest quahog.
Really? All right.
You want a really good one?
Yeah.
One named Ming, they named it Ming, was found in an Icelandic seabed. You could just make this story up, and I believe
I can't
it, right?
See they're making
sure.
The up.
It had to come from Iceland, right? It had to be. In 2007. And they measured it or whatever they do, their little hocus pocus to figure out how old. 507 years old, the clam. Guinness World Record, oldest animal. 507 years you've been living. What do these things do?
Not much.
Not a lot, yeah. Which is probably why it lives so long. It doesn't do
incredibly,
anything.
Yeah, incredibly low metabolic rates.
Well, can clams like die of old age? I mean, do they just get old and die? Do you just get eaten?
Eventually they get you. Eventually someone gets you.
Yeah.
And then there was also a 374-year-old mollusk was collected off the coast of Iceland in 1968.
This is why people come to the show for this material.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, there is a dispute whether Bing is 507 years old or 403. There was a debate.
It's a pretty wide
range. Of 104 years. Very specific. Yeah.
Yeah. That's thing. It's 507. It's not just 500. Like, how are we figuring this out?
I think they just make it up and get like government grants. You got to have a guy. Someone's got to be out there who measures Abraham Lincoln's.
Yeah. We need anthropologists to weigh in. Email us, hit us up on Twitter. Tell us how Abraham Lincoln could be. Traced back to 209 or 1809.
Abraham. All right. That's our, let's be done.
Yeah.
We'll be back later in the week. We have a special edition, special guest coming. We're not, I will not reveal because until he actually appears, we're going to have a guest, supposedly. He may be offended by this episode and bail. I don't know. Or just say, this is really a stupid podcast because you just talked about a clam. Rather than like break down FAU's chances in the Sweet 16. Sorry, but that's why we listen. So we'll be back later in the week. But appreciate you all listening. Continue subscribing, and we will talk to you later.